Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and we're holding our scarves upside down in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, our cup fever turned out to be just a nasty little sniffle as our dreams of FA Cup glory were ended for another year as we went down at Spurs. However, it shows a clear indication of our direction of travel in the fact that we went to the game with no fear of facing a so-called top big club on their own turf. And that, in part, is to do with the tremendous work being done behind the scenes by Dan Ashworth. So it's disappointing then that he has handed in his resignation this week to take up a role at another Premier League club. But as the winter turns to spring, he'll have a lot of time to look after his garden as he won't be able to go anywhere just yet. Today, we head to Vicarage Road to face Roy Hodgson's side, who are fighting to avoid dropping straight back down to the Championship and recorded their first clean sheet of the season last Saturday at Burnley. Let's hope that trend doesn't continue. And then on Tuesday, we head to Old Trafford to face a Man United side who are flattering to deceive at the moment. And perhaps this is our best chance to record our first ever victory there and turn the theatre of dreams into the theatre of nightmares. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer, Brian Owen. And we also welcome back a man who's been described as a boffin, an egghead, a spreadsheet nerd, but we know him as Mr. Wonky Chomp. Welcome back to Kieran Maguire, of course, from The Price of Football. Well, hi, guys. Lovely to see you all again. It's been an interesting week, really, with the stuff about Dan Ashworth. Basically, social media was awash with all sorts of negative comments about it. But I mean, most of them probably didn't actually know what he did, to be fair. So, Kieran, I mean, what was your opinion when you saw the news that Dan has been approached to go to another Premier League club?
Disappointed, but not necessarily surprised. I think he's been with the Albion a few years. I've spoken to people at West Brom. They've spoken very highly of him. He's held in similar high regard at the Football Association. In terms of his role, it's to act as sort of an intermediary at the club in terms of the boardroom, the management team, to have consistency of culture through all of the Albion. You know, Graham Potter is the first team coach, but Dan Ashworth has a much broader remit than that. And I think in terms of the development and recruitment of players over the course of the last two or three years, he's done an excellent job. And we wish him nothing but the best. You know, he's made a decision for the sake of his career and his family. And I think there should be no ill will from anybody at the Albion as a result of that.
How much clout do you think we've lost with his resignation?
In terms of our ability to recruit, I think that'll be relatively marginal because ultimately he will be working, or he has been working with Graham Winstanley in terms of player identification. But when it actually comes to the negotiations of contracts, that's more part of Paul Barber's remit. I think Dan has been very good in terms of encouraging young players to come and stay to the club. And you know, it has been testament, you know, the number of players that the Albion have been signing that we've never yet seen, I think has been intriguing. And that's clearly part of the overall strategy of the club, which is endorsed by Tony and Paul and Graham as well. So he is part of a team that appeared to be all rowing in the same direction. You don't often get that at clubs.
Yeah, the work that's been done, Brian, as well, is to make the club sustainable going forwards as well, isn't it, with regards to the bringing the players through and creating that pathway to the first team?
Well, that's sort of what I was told, where you do say the word club, in that's probably why I think even when this first came up, Brighton sensed he was the perfect man for the Newcastle job, because it's an all-club holistic approach, if that's the right words. It's not just what I was told, like if you had a European sort of head of football or something, they're very much first team squad and no more than that, whereas Dan is more the whole club, everything, or every sort of branch of the club. And that's why they saw him as the perfect man to go to Newcastle when that first came up, albeit reluctantly.
Brian, are you suggesting he might be going to Newcastle?
Oh, shouldn't I have said that? No, well, well, it...
Can anyone comment on the legality or otherwise of the contract legalities of what's actually happening at the moment? Does anyone have any lowdown on this, or is this just basically all we're being told publicly?
I think all of the parties involved have been very diplomatic. There will have been NDAs signed by the three parties in terms of the Albion, Dan Ashworth, and any prospective employer. And I think the Albion want to keep things as under the radar as they can going forwards, although it would not come as a great surprise if he ended up being a second Dan.
Very good. Now, there's a parallel that I want to strike here, and maybe you can actually agree or poo-poo it. Is that the parallel that springs to mind here is when Richard Scudamore left the Premier League, and there was a big sort of brouhaha about him getting a payoff. Now, I'm not talking about Dan Ashworth getting a payoff, but there was an issue about the knowledge that he has behind the scenes at Brighton and Hove Albion. I imagine one of the concerns that the Albion have is whether he's going to use any of that knowledge to his advantage or worse, Albion's cost when he, you know, should he go to, you know, whatever club he goes to, or assuming he goes to Newcastle. Maybe or maybe not the case, but is there something, you know, familiar or resonant within that kind of thing within football?
Yeah, that happens all of the time. I think we got to look at this season to start off with. There's a £2 million difference in respect of every position in the table. It would be pretty galling, I would imagine, for the remainder of the Albion senior hierarchy if the Albion ended up finishing one place below, for example, Newcastle United at the end of the season, and Dan Ashworth had gone in February. So that's, yeah, that's a £2 million decision. Immediately to take into consideration. With regards to Richard Scudamore, the reason why he was put on extended gardening leave was that there was a fear that he was going to be recruited by Sky or one of the other senior broadcasters. And he already had significant knowledge with regard to the expectations of the fees that the Premier League were going to try to negotiate in respect of the forthcoming or the upcoming TV deal. So therefore, by putting him on extended leave and effectively giving him a £5 million payoff where he could do whatever he wanted, it meant that the new people at the Premier League had a little bit of leeway and time to negotiate that contract with him not being able to get involved on the other side of the negotiation table.
Okay, but then with regard to Dan Ashworth then, Kieran, then obviously he'll be going to this other club that may or may not have a bird on its crest or involved in its title.
Well, Crystal Palace, surely.
Yeah, that's the one. But yeah. When he goes to this club, I mean, obviously, he will be going there with the knowledge of exactly how Brighton Hove Albion is run, with exactly what the transfer targets and the future planning is. So, and that there's talk that this gardening leave could be a very, very long time. I mean, how long can you do that for?
Without seeing an individual's contract, I don't think it is possible to comment with any degree of certainty. But what Brighton Hove Albion will be in a position to do is to go to the other club and say he is contractually obliged, for example, to have given 6 months' notice. We were willing to release him from that notice period if you are willing to give us financial compensation. That's business. You know, that happens all the time. It happens in the world of finance. It happens in many other industries where you've got very talented individuals. So he could rock up at another club next week if the right agreement can be made between the two parties. So it could drag on for the full period of his of his notice period. I don't think that would be in anybody's interest, if truth be told. But I do think that when you've got somebody such as Tony Bloom sitting on one side of a negotiating table, there's a reason why he's a very successful poker player, and he knows when to blink and he knows when to shake and so on. And I think the Albion are playing hardball here, and I fully understand their decision to do so.
Yeah, well, there was an interview with him on the club website today, being Friday, and he says that he leaves with a heavy heart, and the fact that he's loved living on the South Coast, which basically means he's probably heading further north, shall we say, Brian?
Well, to be fair, Burgess Hill is off the South Coast, yeah. Mate, so I wouldn't.
But although I should
that
say
either.
That Everton and Chelsea are both looking for a technical director at the moment as well, so it might not be what we're thinking, although we suspect it probably is. But I mean, David Weir he was announced as assistant technical director a few weeks ago, and I think we all suspected what that meant. That he was shadowing Dan Ashworth there. He comes into the role with a good pedigree, but I mean, other people will be throwing their hats into the ring, Brian, and I'm sure they've already had a very high caliber of candidate already.
Well, initial contacts within an hour, as I understand it, 10 a.m. Monday was when the announcement was made, and pretty much straight away there were people, I don't know if they were applicants as such, but, you know, inquiries, contacts, what have you. Sort of following on from what Kieran said there, the message that I've got from Brighton is that in terms of the time and how long it might take for Dan to go wherever he's going, then Brighton's are in no interest in helping any other club or any other person. It's all about protecting their position. So, like he says, it might take a little while. But, yeah, there was, within the hour, that's what I was told, there was already contacts coming in.
Absolutely. Okay, well, I mean, I'm sure this story is going to run and run for a little while.
Aidy, can I just chip in here? I mean, it's not really a question or anything like that to the others. I just want to sort of, I don't know, maybe others might will agree. I think it's that for there to be people, you know, inquiring within the hour, quote, within the hour, and for the Albion to get a hold of Dan Ashworth in the first place, I think is a mark of, We can talk about how far we've come so many times, and we can put the marker as being when we got into the stadium, when we got approval for the stadium, when we had, you know, we're trying to chase Bill Archer out of the club and what have you. But the progression, and it has been progression, and even those sort of two or three relegations we had in the noughties were only ever sort of blips, you know, taking a step back in order to go forward. The progression of the club that we can now actually, well, within reason, pick and choose a new technical director of football is just a general phrase, a general sort of exclamation of how astonishingly far and high we've climbed within the football pyramid.
Yeah, absolutely, Kieran.
I agree entirely, and certainly from people I speak to in the game, if I'm doing a course and they find out I'm a Brighton fan, it's always, you've got a fantastic setup there, and they're full of praise, and they wouldn't normally do that, yeah, because normally it's, you know, did you go to the last match or so on, but they'll start to talk about the club as an entity. I think the culture of the club is right. It is nurturing. It is one of development. We are starting to punch above our weight after having a long-term strategy, which was implemented by. Yeah, Tony Bloom, Paul Barber, and Dan Ashworth, and clearly Graham Potter as well, that they all buy into that philosophy, and it's starting to reap rewards. So I think we should be, first of all, you know, I've always been proud of being an Albion fan, regardless of what division we're in. But at present, to know that the club is held as sort of a gold standard in how to do the right things. You know, I teach in the city of Liverpool, and having seen what's happened at Everton, where the approach was loads of money, spend, and think afterwards, is indicative of it can fall apart if you don't have a vision. And I think that's one thing the Albion can certainly be proud of.
Okay, well, that leads us neatly on there.
Hang on, AD.
Sorry, I was just very going to quickly just say, personnel-wise, that was all there before Dan Ashworth came. So it's all long-standing. Obviously, I think the board's been there for a decade or so. People like John Morling, Adam Brett on medical. So it's all been there for quite a long time. And they've probably been like sponges on Dan Ashworth as well, absorbing what he's done. So I think they're all well, you know, you'd think they're as well set up as possible to progress from this.
And actually, one of the more fascinating guests that we've had on the show, you just mentioned his name there, he's been on twice, actually, is John Morling. And I think that, you know, it'd be great to have Graham Potter on. It'd be, you know, we've had Gary Dicker on, we've had Andrew Cross and all that, but listening to John Morling and how the entire setup at Lancing works, it's absolutely astonishing. It's breathtaking. Now, for instance, Palace have made this big thing of having this aftercare for kids that they reject from the academy. Now, theirs might be a sort of a formalised thing, but certainly the Albion have been doing this for a long time. There is that thing of being a club in progression. Don't get me wrong, they'll pick up ideas here and there from other clubs, but, you know, listening, if for those who can, if you get an opportunity, do go back to our Audio Boom page and listen to John Morling, because you could learn probably just as much from the club about the club and its setup from him as you probably could from pretty much anyone else. Yeah. So, you know, if you get an opportunity, do go back and listen to them.
Yeah. It's actually on our website as well, that one as well.
Sure.
So there's a few shows in the archive that I think just one or two. Well, but I mean, what you've just been saying though, it leads us neatly on to the fact that we're celebrating 25 years this week since Fans United, that foggy day at the Goldstone where a football match broke out and we won 5-0, which was great. So, Kieran, what were your memories of that particular game?
Well, I was living in Manchester and kids who were 1 and 3, so I wasn't able to attend, but certainly my recollection in terms of the creation of the match, the way that we are always indebted, I think, to Plymouth Argyle and their fan who set it up.
Richard Vaughan is
testament that there are broader things than sort of the tribal nature of supporting an individual football club. And we've seen similar instances of that recently. There are things happening at Rochdale Football Club and Oldham Football Club. I've historically been based in the Northwest, which are very distasteful. And both sets of club fans came together and walked from one ground to the other to try to highlight this. So Fans United was fantastic because we won 5-0, and it was that goal difference that effectively kept Brighton and Hove Albion in existence. And you could argue that, you know, along with many, many other things, that it's one piece of a much bigger jigsaw, which allowed the club to survive and thrive eventually.
Yeah, I mean, and regardless of it, I know that you're doing an awful, I mean, obviously with your show, The Price of Football, which is excellent, and you should check it out. And, but I mean, listening to that, it's just galling that the fact that, I mean, this was like 25 years ago, and it just appears that no lessons have been learned from that. And like, you know, I mean, when clubs are in trouble, Brighton fans are usually first to put their hands up to try to offer their support. But
you have to remember that we weren't first. You know, we had a great, I suppose, a great sort of open campaign. It was the beginning of the internet. We could use that. But if you think back, if you rewind sort of 10 years before that, you know, we, as much as we talk about, oh, we, you know, we were this, we were that, we were down there, you talk it to a Wolverhampton fan, they're really bitter about the fact that when they were, you know, being sold down the river and crash and burn all the way to the fourth division, that no one was there to help them. Now, ours might have been one of those first campaigns where we could actually utilize, like I said, the internet and social, early social media, as such as being, you know, the place where Richard Vaughan posted his post, and we were able to use that. And ours is a kind of a sort of media city anyway. But like I say, it's not as though our story was first. Accrington Stanley were badly run. Let's go back to Leeds City in 1919, all done for financial.
But Al, the issue is, it's not a case of who was first. The issue is the fact that we weren't the last, and it's continuing to, like,
what I'm saying is, it's more than this problem's been going on
around the country. I mean, you look at Bolton, you look at the way that Derby County's being run, and it's just galling. And and Rochdale and Oldham, it's just an ongoing thing. And no lessons have been learned, Kieran.
Well, if you have an industry which is governed through a self-regulation, then you have a set of rules and regulations which are in the best interests of club owners rather than the clubs and the communities that they represent. And that's what we've had historically in football. That's what led to the fan-led review. I can't say too much because I'm currently involved with DCMS on something. But It's going to be really tough to implement because we've got the Premier League and some of the existing forces in football trying to very subtly take down, or not so subtly at times, to take down some of the recommendations of the review to ensure that as much as possible, what we have been seeing in recent years, and you're absolutely right, you know, both Alan and AD, that it's happening too often. And it's increasingly disturbing because we've lost Bury, we've lost Macclesfield Town. I know that there's a Phoenix club at Macclesfield, but that we've still lost Macclesfield Town. And there are other clubs teetering. There were issues at Swindon earlier this year. Rochdale was given a stay of execution. They're currently trying to raise £130,000 because a minority shareholder is causing an awful lot of trouble at that club. And it is a fan-owned club. It always has been. And that's the way they want to stay. There are people who see the football industry as an opportunity to make money. It's a tough, tough fight to prevent that.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kieran, I mean, I think it's amazing that, I mean, it's amazing that you're about to tread the boards, but it's also amazing that the proceeds from your very first Price of Football live show is going to go to that fighting fund for Rochdale.
Well, I mean, Rochdale actually got in contact with us and said, could we do a show before the end of March? And I'm in the middle of term time at present, so I'm struggling for time. Kevin has a number of work commitments, so we would have loved to have done a sort of a benefit gig at Rochdale. So we thought the second best thing that we could do was to give the proceeds, or give the profits, shall we say, from the gig. Can I give a quick plug? It's taking place at Plough Lane, which I think again is a good thing to celebrate, at AFC Wimbledon on the 24th of March. £10, you can get tickets from Eventbrite, and so all the profits are going to the Rochdale Football Club Fighting Fund to ensure that there is a Rochdale Fighting Football Club to celebrate in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, I mean, Rochdale's it's not somewhere we've been for a very long time, I mean, it's a great place to go, isn't it?
But I was just thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking back, it seemed like such a thriving little club when we went. That's not being disrespectful to say little, but it's probably fair enough. But you do remember when we went in the promotion season with Brighton, and I think Brighton just won 8 in a row. 2-2. February. Such a good game, a good atmosphere. I think Keith Hill got the team playing really good football. Brighton fans were raving about the fish and chip shop behind the away end. And somewhere like Oldham, always used to quite enjoy going up to Oldham. And now, we wouldn't want to be going back to that. But at the time, it was great fun going to some of those games at Boundary Park, and there was a big old scuffle in the tunnel. I remember once, when was it, Nathan Elder scored on about 90+6, and really, good atmosphere, vibrant little club. Talking to the steward about Eric Cantona making his debut there at Oldham Athletic in the old top flight, and you have memories of sort of vibrant little places, and it's a shame.
I remember losing 6-1 up there,
Oldham, on the plastic pitch, when the ball bounced over Doug Rugby.
Yeah, but sorry, getting back to the subject that AD raised a few minutes ago, Brian, back to Richard Vaughan's and Warren Christmas, I guess, in helping advertise it to the extent he did. Fans United Day, were you about in those days down here?
Well, I was working in Horsham, so not really Brighton. So I was seeing it from a little way away, but not within Brighton itself. So I was sort of aware of it, but I wasn't involved locally. I mean, I do remember reading a piece going up to an away game at Hartlepool, a columnist moaning how unfair it was that the whole country was against Hartlepool that day, which seemed a different takeaway, that's for sure. So, So anyway, no, not really. I wasn't at the goals.
The fact that there were Hartlepool fans in the home end was what spoke volumes about it, to be fair. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We're delighted to be brought to you as ever in association with oldfootballshirts.com. And actually, just before we move on to Shirt of the Week, I should mention that there was a brilliant picture that it's been around for a while, but of the North Stand on that Fans United day. If you want to know what our sponsor looked like 25 years ago, go. He's the one holding the scarf upside down with his lovely wife, Louise.
Even I don't want to know what he looked like 25 years ago.
But we've got Phil has given us a great shirt of the week for us this week. And now last week, it was analysed forensically. Let's see if we can do that again. Kieran, do you want to have a go at describing this particular jersey? I know you're colourblind. I can tell you it's black and red.
Right, well, that is a help because I wasn't quite sure whether it was navy or dark grey or green or black. It's got a strange demon in one corner, and it's got a little shirt badge as well, which looked quite a significant one. So I suspect it could be Bundesliga. It's made by Nike. It looks quite a classy shirt. I think it's one I think I'd quite like in the collection, but wouldn't like to say which club. But I'm going German.
Any idea, Brian?
Not really. I mean, it does. It says on the front, "Gimper by Leyenberger," which sounds pretty German. So I think so. They've got one gold star as well. So again, I don't know who that would be. Something like Bayern Munich.
Well, the badge itself looks like from here looks like Ajax, but I'd be of the opinion it really isn't. And one gold star, it could be someone. It's the devil the devil thing that's getting me. I mean, I'm sure that if it's German or if it's Austrian, then they'll probably say, yeah, I know. Hang on, unless it's a bull. It's not Red Bull, is it? It's Austrian.
No, it's not. You're absolutely correct that it is a German shirt. And Phil, he says this, "I chose this as your shirt of the week because I particularly like the Red Devil embossed as a shadow pattern in the fabric. This is a 2019-2020 away shirt of German Free Liga side FC Kaiserslautern. They're nicknamed the Red Devils as their home kit is red. The team was formed in 1900 and they play at the 49,850 capacity Fritz Walter Stadion in Kaiserslautern, which is in the state of Rhineland-Palatinate, which is in the midwestern part of Germany. The stadium is named after the West German World Cup winner of 1954, Fritz Walter, who played his entire career with 1SCK, and which was some 364 league games. And he also played 61 times for Germany, where he scored 33 times. The Red Devils were founder members of the Bundesliga, and they played in the top flight uninterrupted from 1963 to 1996, during which time they won the league on four occasions and made the Champions League quarterfinals in 1999. They won the German Cup in 1996, and the same season they were relegated. At the time, they're one of only four teams who have been ever present in the Bundesliga. And can you name the other three?
Ooh. Sorry, at the time, so not anymore.
Yeah, so this was in 96.
Okay, so I would say Cologne.
Yes, SC Cologne, yes. Cologne, yep.
Dortmund?
No.
I think Brian was about to say Borussia Mönchengladbach.
I think Kevin Keegan.
Hamburg.
Hamburg is one. Maybe a sausage you might have.
Oh, Eintracht Frankfurt.
Eintracht.
Yeah. Moving swiftly on. A period of yo-yoing ensued from 1996, with the final indignity of being relegated to the Free Liga in 2018. This was the first time in the club history that they played in the third tier. They currently sit second in the league, which is an automatic promotion place. They have plenty of links to the UK. Mark Schwarzer, Yura Dorkiev, Uwe Fuchs, Stefan Freund, Michael Ballack, Uwe Rössler have all played for 1FCK and also in the UK. He has struggled to find any links to the Albion, so he'll leave that to somebody else to work on. Okay, yeah, thanks for that, Phil. And of course, you can see that over 110,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com.
Did he choose that because Kaiserslautern, the first team to ever lose at Vicarage Road, Watford, in European football? Probably not, but there we have a little...
Did that come from?
I googled Brighton, Watford, Brighton, Kaiserslautern, to see if there are any players who come, you know, any players with in common, and it came up with Watford beating Kaiserslautern 3-0 in 1983. Watford's first ever European win at Vicarage Road. So let's see if there's a repeat of that scoreline today. There's Briegel. Is it Peter Briegel? Hans-Peter Briegel, the big left back from the German national team. He was the captain there with Wilf Rostrand. And yeah,
so well, I've watched John, I remember, for his fabulous moustache, of course.
Not on this picture, but great, yeah, great. The great days of Kaiserslautern when they went to Vicarage Road in European competition.
Okay, just a quick notice board before we move on. We just want to say thank you to everyone who got in contact after last week's show. Obviously, it was a USA special, Al, and we've had a few people liking and commenting about the show. And it seems that the seagull's nest is ever bigger. And we've had quite a few Canadians get in contact as well.
Yeah,
about
the Canadians
that.
Were quite upset with us for not mentioning that. To be honest, I just picked four random people off Twitter. Who I knew were US born, but it seems that since that show, we could have actually had at least another dozen. So maybe we'll have to revisit the whole notion of having another US born fans on there. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a bizarre thing. I mean, for those who pick, and I think maybe Brian and Kieran do this, they pick a given US side randomly for the sport that they love. In the same way that these people would actually pick us. So in that sense, either Brian and, well, both of you, have you got sort of teams in the US that you pick for, I don't know, you like their colours or their signet or their badge or their name? Have you got any sort of doozies for us?
Not exactly random, but it's where we've been travelling up into a game and then followed them. I went to watch Golden State Warriors when they were the worst team in the NBA. So followed some of their games on Pontel videos and what have you, when they were literally worst or second worst in the, and obviously they're the best team. They've been the best team in the NBA ever since. But in those days, they were about the worst. They had a point guard who was about 5'6". But I know from doing my live reports in the early days of the live blog, when there weren't many people coming from games on the internet, I used to do the updates and look at the comments. And we got quite a few from America. I remember there was one, but I can't remember what his name was. He was in Canada and he said he followed it in the whiteout to get himself down to Tim Hortons and get himself a coffee and get on the Argos website and follow the games from with Dean. So there was quite a lot of overseas following, and obviously from that way the time a bit easier for them, so they were in first thing in the morning following the game. So I'm not surprised that you got so much feedback.
Yeah, so I mean, Kieran, is it true that the Premier League is gathering more TV money from overseas than it is getting in the UK?
Yes, the Premier League put out an announcement on Thursday that for the first time, international rights are going to exceed the level of the domestic TV rights. And it was very clever of the, should we call them the Sneaky Six, to threaten to set up their own competition a couple of years ago. Historically, the international rights have been split evenly between all 20 members of the Premier League and the you-know-who brigade. Bullied the other clubs into making some fairly significant concessions. So now the money is going to be skewed towards the clubs at the top of the division. Now, there's no doubt that they are more popular with both domestic and international audiences, but giving rich people even more money sort of galls a bit for me.
So we have it within our remit, and maybe the Albion Roar and other podcasts and the papers and what have you, and maybe even the Price of Football podcast, really ought to be sort of harnessing and maybe, gathering in more and more US fans, so that maybe Albion's clout in America is a bit sort of better and we can actually get a few more quid compared to the Greedy Six. Just a thought.
Yeah, but I think the only way of doing that is, I mean, obviously the TV stuff is one thing, but there's no massive secret that that's one of the reasons why these big clubs go and do these massive tournaments pre-season in the States and in the Far East to get the supporters on side, and then the fact that they can actually see these heroes which they watch on the small screen in the flesh.
The work that both of you do in your respective fields, Brian and Kieran, is there sort of do you have any data or any feeling yourself as to where the Albion's biggest market overseas lies? Is it in specifically English-speaking countries? Is it across Europe? Do you know anything about this?
Not really, but you'd think it was connected to some of the signings that they've made. And you see how long-lived that interest is when they sign a player from overseas and then that player doesn't do very well and then they depart. I'm not sure. But what you're saying about going abroad, remember that was very much on Brighton's agenda leading into to lockdown and COVID, to go to, I think, this side of the United States, you know, with their American Express links, with their think possibly the Night Leagues as well, but certainly with American Express. So it's very much on their agenda to go in pre-season to the sort of the East Coast. So whether that be, whether that resurfaces, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Would the Argus pay for you to go over there, Brian?
I'm not sure. I followed the Brighton Bears in Europe years ago, and I've been to Le Havre and Longford on pre-season, so we'll see. But
do you have any data, Kieran?
There's nothing. All you can do is sort of look at social media followings. I'm bringing some. I teach in a football MBA course, and I'm bringing 15 students down to a match in a few weeks, and I've got a few Ecuadorian students who are very excited at the prospect, given our recent signings. So,
Sarmiento might be fit by then, and obviously Cachilo, and it's good. Well, okay, well, let's move on. Let's talk about some actual football that's happened. Unfortunately for us, we got knocked out of the FA Cup last Saturday. Let's face it, there's been this thing that everyone talks about, the magic of the FA Cup, and the tournament this year has been absolutely brilliant, hasn't it? I mean, I was so annoyed with West Ham, not once, but twice, like breaking Kidderminster hearts in the last minute of injury time, in the first in normal time, and then in extra time to deny them even penalties.
Magic bullying or trolling?
But Boreham Wood knocking out plucky little Bournemouth, you know, that was a delight. But unfortunately, we won't be progressing in the tournament. Both teams took the game very seriously. Strong sides were put out, Brian. What were your thoughts?
Well, Graham Potter has done that. He has been fairly strong in the FA Cup. If you look back at the changes, Chris Hughton made more changes in the early rounds than Potter has. So that's probably contrary to what the perception might be of sort of the traditional old school manager. But it just very quickly sort of unraveled, didn't it? I thought Brighton, I was just typing in, they got away with one when Sanchez gave the ball straight to Harry Kane, and gave the ball straight back. And then before you know it, Webster in a bit of a corner. It wasn't like a totally unforced blunder, but obviously he sort of stumbled, and the great finish by Kane. And then you saw that second goal. I think Tottenham sort of had Brighton where they wanted them. I thought they played it fairly well. They were initially, when Tottenham were sitting back and almost like counter-attacking, if you like, I heard some grumbles around me because we're more or less sitting within the Tottenham supporters. But then as soon as they go one up, and it's, you know, they looked like they're dangerous every time they went forward.
I mean, Kieran, we know that Robert Sanchez has a very relaxed mood about the way that he plays. But perhaps it was just a little bit too relaxed. The warning signs were there. And we've had it with him in the past as well, where he's had a little bit of a dip in form, it would be fair to say. But then all of a sudden he'll just pull out a worldly save. But I mean, those opening 15 minutes were not great for him, were they?
No, I mean, it was slightly reminiscent of what happened at Anfield when Mane scored eventually with his arm, but a very relaxed. But the pluses tend to outweigh the minuses. As far as Graham Potter is concerned, he encourages the players to take risks. And I think the players feel relaxed that they're not under a huge amount of pressure. If they make a single error, that they're going to get, they're certainly not going to get slaughtered by Graham Potter. That we'll leave that to people on the internet to do that, sadly, these days.
Yeah. I mean, did you think, Lewis Dunk came back into this game, guys, and he did look a little bit rusty. But I mean, Adam Webster made a couple of errors in the game as well. And I mean,
well, the FA Cup is the perfect foil to get rid of your confidence, isn't it? I mean, yes, we want to do well in it. Yes, we want to not get turned over by Spurs. But in the great scheme of things, and I'm sure Kieran will attest to this, given the money that's available, the Premier League is still the priority. Yeah, we want to relive our glory years from 40 years ago, and it'd be fabulous if we could do it. But you know, if you know the team hadn't played for a couple of weeks, you know, the captain was coming back. There was a couple of things he wanted to try, and you know, for me, I think the game was a free hit. So long as you don't get blown out of the water 6-0, then fair enough. But for me, I think the game was a bit of a free hit.
I mean, for that first goal, Kieran, Do you think that? I mean, we saw it was kind of telegraphed in the fact that, I mean, A, it was a mistake from Sanchez, it was a mistake from Webster, and then Lewis backed off and gave like Harry Kane the opportunity to finish. I mean, what was a brilliant goal?
Well, yeah, I think we've got to give Harry Kane a lot of credit because he still had to curl it into the far corner and it was unstoppable. We were sloppy. I thought Lewis Dunk improved as the match proceeded. And Spurs showed the difference between themselves and ourselves. We had more possession, as we tend to do. They took their chances and we didn't take ours.
Brian, were you surprised then that basically that we did dominate the possession and that Spurs actually like played us up, were playing us on the counter at home?
Didn't have any sort of huge preconceived ideas, but I sort of watched it as it unfolded, but not particularly. But I mean, it was obviously it worked so well for them, and we were sort of sitting right behind Spurs fans who were on their feet every single time they burst forward. So I thought they always looked sort of dangerous doing that. I think I'd probably feel slightly more philosophical about it if I hadn't then seen Southampton go there and win 3-2 in the week. That probably you thought maybe that could have been Brighton. But listening to some, as well, looking at comments on Twitter from other reporters or listening to people in the Zoom afterwards who don't always watch Brighton, they were more complimentary about Brighton than the people who always watch them. They said, oh, Brighton, they're 2-0 down, but they're still playing some good football. And they're quite more complimentary, I think, about Brighton's performance than the regular Brighton watchers.
Yeah. I mean, one player that really stood out in the game, Kieran, was Ibe Basuma, who's just come back from the Cup of Nations, representing his country for the first time in 3 years. And I think I'm not saying he came back a different player, but he just seemed, I mean, he's already probably our best player, but he just seemed better than he's ever been.
Yeah, Ibe is a magnificent player. I think he's shown that for the last 18 months. He will want to be able to prove himself, and let's be honest, he's presently in the shop window. We anybody that's read his comments sort of picked up the comments from his agent. 18 months left remaining on his contract. Well, his representatives and him, he will A, want to get an opportunity to play at a higher level than the Albion. And we've got to be honest as to where we are in the pecking order of football. And I think he could complement any of the traditional clubs that are competing for Champions League places and enhance all of those clubs. Even at Manchester City, I think he'd be in the squad.
It's an interesting one. I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, when it comes to a year left on the contract, I mean, Brian, we know there's been reports this week that Aston Villa have confirmed that they put a bid in for 35 million. In the January window, I mean, his value with 1 year left on his contract will probably be a lot less than what we want for him and what he's worth, it really, when it comes up, if he does go this summer.
Yeah, I think Kieran's probably got a better idea of the sliding scale on that, but it was almost ironic. It was sort of Gerrard-esque, wasn't it, how he sort of grabbed the team by the scruff of the neck and dragged them back into the match on Saturday. You say come back a different player, come back exactly the same player, which you don't always get when players come back from tournaments. I think you'll see as some of the players coming back from Africa, and you might see some of them coming back from the World Cup in about a year's time. But I suppose it's that balance, how his value goes down compared to the value you get from him by keeping him for longer. I don't know if that's something how they weigh up. But I was surprised to see Steven Gerrard mentioning him by name, that's for sure, in this week in the media, because that doesn't happen these days. And I thought that was a little bit mischievous to do that.
Alan?
No, I was just going to say, I wouldn't mind betting he came back with his tail on fire because, you know, he'd gone over to play in the AFCON and he wasn't a regular starter. I mean, he was a regular, excellent player. But, you know, when you see Brighton Hove Albion, a Premier League side, and I won't say the team's built around him, but he's so key. And yet his country can't even pick him or can't even start him. And they go out earlier than expected. Then and he comes home early expected that he can play in an FA Cup. You know, maybe he came in and like I say, his tail was on fire and wanted a point to prove, if nothing else, to his national boss. I don't know, it's a way of thinking. But then we do know that he is an exceptional player.
Mm. But I mean, we did see glimpses of a player that has possibly been earmarked to be his replacement, which is Moise Kachido. And in his brief cameo, he looked really good, Kieran.
Yes, he came on with the match effectively lost, but he's very technical. He's strong. He's got big shoes to fill if he wants to take over from Yves Bissouma. But I think, again, it's part of the Albion philosophy that they know when Yves Bissouma's contract is going to expire. They will have already approached his representative with regards to an extension. You know, I think you don't have to get any comments from anybody to know that must have been presumably rejected. And they've been forward planning now for a period of time. And that is one of the very encouraging things. The club responds rather than reacts to issues. And it therefore has a smooth transition planned.
Alan?
Brian, you're a fluent Spanish speaker.
Yes.
How is his name pronounced?
They call it Moises. I thought they might split the vowels up, but Moises and then Caicedo. With it being a Latin American, it's not a f effect, it's Caicedo. But I thought it was interesting, the pure fact that he put him on. Potter seemed really keen to get him on when you think he's just come back from South America. And I think he got back at quite short notice and he was really keen to get him involved in that game, which probably tells you a lot, whether he did badly or whether you think he did well or what. Just the fact that he wanted to get him involved in that game when perhaps the most obvious thing would have been for him to get back and rest or not be involved or stay on the bench. You know, even when we were talking pre-game on the Thursday, it would have been, it was like, yeah, really want to get him involved if possible. So I don't know, as a direct replacement for Bissouma, if that's the way it's going. I mean, is there a direct replacement for Ben White? Not necessarily, but it's a way of getting the best out of what you've got.
Yeah, go on, Al.
I was about to say, would it be the case that Mwepu is ahead of him in the pecking order, or is Mwepu a different player to Bissouma?
Possibly a different player. I'm not sure. Again,
I see him as a different player.
Ahead. Just,
yeah. I think that Mr. Computer is his first thought is going forwards and to shoot, where I think Eves is possibly a little bit more defensive, although he was very attack-minded on Saturday.
So if we're talking about Mwepu here, are we talking about someone who's more likely to be in the place of someone like Pascal Gross or Alexis McAllister, where we're saying that effectively that Bissouma is a disruptor? Him and Lallana are the disruptors and the other two are kind of more forward players. So if and when Mwepu's ready, that he's more likely to take McAllister's role.
Yeah, but Al, we go back to one of your favourite quotes from Chris Catlin, was it Chris Catlin or was it Brian Clough? I think it was Brian Clough, who was like hog carriers and violin players. But Bissouma is both.
Bissouma's better. Yeah, he's not just a breaker up. He's so good on the ball, isn't he? You think he's lost the ball and somehow it's still stuck to his foot. I think McAllister is probably the closest in terms of quality on the ball. But then we've seen just the bits and pieces, Caicedo, what he could do. So I'm not sure Mwepu is quite that good, although it's obviously still a high standard.
But that leads me nicely on to my next note, which I've got here, which... I mean, I've had a bet noir about certain players finishing, and for once it's not actually Adam Lallana in this particular instance. But I mean, the law of averages says that at some point, Jakob Moda is going to put one right in the top bins, isn't he? Because I mean, he can't keep missing from. I mean, there was a brilliant opportunity that was created for him right on the edge of the box, with a nice little cut back to him, and he had the whole goal to aim at. And he didn't hit the target. He had a couple of opportunities in this game. Again, he didn't hit the target. And in games previously, again, he has not hit the target. It's frustrating.
Are you slagging off Skoda's here?
I think that we're talking. I think he's come back with a Lada Riva rather than a brand new Skoda, to be honest. It's he does so much good work in the build up, and I mean, one of the chances that he missed, he the way he won the ball back and laid it off, and the ball ended up with him in space with a whole goal to aim at, and he missed it. And
Andy, take a breath. Breathe, man. Breathe.
Yeah.
Kieran, how good could Jakob Moda be?
I think he's been a very solid player, constantly getting sixes, six and a halves out of ten for me this season without dominating the game. Sometimes you think about that last 15, 20 minutes, he's not done something, but then he is a good technical player. I was at West Brom for the FA Cup game. He did score a good goal there. So I think he's a good squad player. Could we get an upgrade? Potentially, but he's still young, and I think there's room for improvement from him.
I think that's the point, isn't it? We bought him effectively as an under 21, and he I think he came on leaps and bounds ahead of maybe what the club were prepared for, because it was him and Karbovnik that came in, and Murder just went, well, murdered everyone. So we're back to the point you were making earlier about the nurturing, the pathway through the system. Even if you come in as an under 21, you know, if Graham Potter likes the look of you, you know, there's always that opportunity. And you know, it just comes across as, I'm sure it's not always the case, I'm sure they have the old falling out now and again, but it comes across as just a big happy camp.
I think there comes a point when he's ready, because I can still remember Modé not getting on against Blackpool in the FA Cup, because it went, did it go back to 2-1? Was it, anyway, it was only 2-1. Oh, Brighton should have been further ahead, and all the time it was 2-1. He wasn't going to put him back on against Blackpool, and that's a year ago. So when you see sort of the progress from there, I mean, I like the way that he just has this nice knack of just passing the ball, making room for teammates, and then finding him in that space. He's quite a sort of an understated thing, but I quite like that. And sometimes you don't notice it until you watch a game back. But as you say, if he can start scoring from 18 to 20 yards, if he could sort that sat nav out a little bit.
Same for all of them. Same for all of them.
Okay, well, before we move on, how good was Bissouma's goal? I know it was deflected, but I mean, the work he did to actually get himself into that position to fight. I mean, he had a sighter a few minutes before that, but it was this one. The fact it was great. He kept it under the crossbar for a start, which was good.
There's that, but I'm also looking. I mean, it was fantastic work from his point of view, and he is obviously that good a player. That, and I think that everyone's right that and even Manchester City, that he would actually and enhance and benefit their system. But that was still some pretty sloppy defending from Spurs as well. But seeing as it's the Albion Roar, I don't care. And that was a great finish.
Okay, well, let's move on. We've got a big week coming up. Watford coming up first. Now under their third manager of the season, our old mate. We know exactly what to expect from him, Brian. We know that it's going to be four solid banks of four, like two banks of four.
Four banks of four, that's cheating. Four,
yeah, it is four. It is really cheating. But two banks of four and saying, come and break us down and try and hit us on the counter.
Yeah, a bit wary, I suppose, because when you think of what's happened in the last two seasons, Roy Hodgson versus Graham Potter, when I don't know what the shots on target and the percentage possession has been, and it's ended up as very little. So listening to Potter Thursday, he was talking a lot about Roy Hodgson, and he's, you know, quite an admirer of him, and because he's been in Sweden, he's heard so much about Roy Hodgson when he was in Sweden at Östersunds, and listening to the Hodgson history. So he seems to have sort of organised, doesn't he, from what I can tell. They're not conceding as many goals. Graham Potter was actually asked if he's going to manage into his 70s, but he's not planned that far as yet. But, but obviously a return to where he made his debut as well in charge of Brighton with that 3-0 win.
Kieran, now obviously the games against Roy's side has not gone particularly brilliantly of late. But if you take the derby atmosphere out of it and the fact that the players... this is against Watford, it's not against Crystal Palace. I mean, will that have any impact, do you think?
I don't think so. The players will have been drilled. They will have been given their individual instructions, just like they have for every match. And we are a good team to watch. We are a patient team. And I think we can be reasonably confident that we're not going to capitulate in the first 10 minutes and be two or three down. So it's actually quite good. Roy Hodgson is a conservative manager, always has been. And that's not a criticism. You know, he will set up his side, as Brian had said. I think with the Albion these days, we are a little bit more creative and doing things differently.
Okay. And obviously, we've got another big game coming up on Tuesday night. At the brilliant time, 8:15 on a Tuesday night. Good luck getting home, guys. that's my message on that one.
It's not going to happen, is it? I mean, we are talking, there's nothing you can do about the fixture itself because it is a leftover from the postponements. And there are no Sassies left this season. I mean, even if there's two teams that were out of the FA Cup, you still can't change that kind of thing. So, it's just going to be as difficult to get home from a 7:30 or a 7:45 kickoff as it is for an 8:15. So this is where then sort of TV likes to rule the roost and they'll dictate as they see fit. Even if it's not on sale in this country, which I'm not sure it is, it'll be up for grabs overseas. So, you know,
BT Sport, isn't it? It's BT yeah. Sport game.
Is it BT Sport?
Okay. Yeah. As it was the original, which I think was a 12:30 on Saturday.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, it was. I think it was 2 o'clock on a Sunday. I think. Wasn't it?
But, no, 12:30. No.
Oh, okay. You're right. But Kieran, I mean, we've never won at Old Trafford. Is this a really good opportunity for us?
I think we've got an opportunity to certainly contribute to the match. We've got to be in a confident position given the way that Manchester United have been sort of grinding out results at best, and they've been disappointing in other areas. I did see our only league point at Old Trafford in 1982-83, where Andy Ritchie scored and Arthur Augustin got the equaliser. So yeah, go there with confidence.
Is that really our only league point there?
They've pushed them pretty close, Brighton. I've been to the games in recent seasons. They were 1-0 up last season, and there's others. There was a deflected shot when Lewis Dunk was being kicked in the unmentionables, if I remember rightly, in Chris Hughton's first season.
There's been controversies. I mean, last season we were 1-0 up, and then we should have definitely had a penalty, and it was somehow not given after Harry Maguire basically assaulted Danny Welbeck. Even VAR didn't.
You have a downer on United, don't you?
Brian, I mean, you were there with me at that game at the Amex where they scored after the final whistle. So,
I think that was actually one of the less controversial things, the fact the penalty was taken after the final whistle, because there was others. There was the general timekeeping. There was other decisions that went on in the match. The fact that a VAR check straight after the final whistle, I didn't have so much problem with that if there's an offence 1 second before the final whistle.
No, because the final whistle should have gone yes, 5 minutes before that.
That was more the case than one or two other incidents. But I think if there's otherwise, you means the last corner of the game is played without VAR in operation. So I think that was fair enough to go back and check it. But yeah, there was a lot of other things. But that was heartbreaking, wasn't it, in a way? But there's been frustrations up at Old Trafford, so they've gone close to a point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Wade, if only you'd let us know about how frustrated you are. Listen, we're just about out of time, so just before we go, Kieran, could you give us one last plug for your live show?
Yes, it's the Price of Football Live on Thursday the 24th of March at AFC Wimbledon Cherry Red Records. It's only £10 to get tickets. You can get them from Eventbrite, and as I say, all profits are going to the fighting fund for Rochdale Football Club to ensure its existence.
But that's all we've got time for this week. So thank you, of course, to Brian Owen. Thank you to Kieran Maguire. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Aidy Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.
Burns.